If you love this podcast and IPR, you probably know that it's fueled by listener dollars. Hi, I'm Rick Brewer, a talk show producer at Iowa Public Radio. And part of my job is connecting with Iowans who have stories to tell. When you contribute to IPR, you help make that possible. Membership contributions make up 57% of IPR's budget. That's huge and amazing. So do your part to support the podcast and programs you enjoy. Go to iowapublicradio.org and tap the red donate button. Thank you.
So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This half hour, a few perspectives on the pandemic and our vaccination program. In just a few minutes, we'll be joined by health reporters Michaela Ram of the Gazette and our own Natalie Krebs. But first, let's talk again for a few minutes with Dr. Jorge Salinas. He's the hospital epidemiologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Dr. Salinas, welcome, and thank you for joining us again.
Hello, Ben. Happy to be here.
Let's get your take on the pause in the use of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine. May continue for a week to 10 days after expert advisors to the CDC said they needed more time to assess a possible link to a very rare but serious blood clotting disorder. Governor Reynolds received the Johnson & Johnson vaccine on March 3rd. She said she doesn't regret it and says said this week that the rewards far outweigh the risks. What more can you tell us about the risks being assessed?
I agree with that observation that these events appear to be very rare. Most medications that are used in humans have the possibility of having very rare adverse events, but we use them for a reason. We use them because we know that there is a benefit of having them. I think that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine fits that bill very well. It's a very good vaccine. It works. It prevents infections, hospitalizations, and death. But as you vaccinate millions of people in need, there is the possibility that one, two, three in a million may develop adverse events such as these rare cerebral venous sinus thrombosis.
Mm-hmm. And yes, very rare. So as I understand it, the number is something like 7 million given the Johnson & Johnson. Six have perhaps a serious blood clotting problem, one fatality there. What message, Dr. Salinas, do you have for those who may be concerned because they've already received the Johnson & Johnson?
So these events, again, are very rare. They appear to affect younger individuals, possibly women a little bit more than men. They are immune-mediated. Again, most people who get the vaccine will do well. And these adverse events happened within 2 weeks of the administration of the vaccine. So if you're past 2 weeks of the administration, you're not going to have these adverse events. Again, it's very rare, is the exception rather than the rule. Again, virtually all that receive the vaccine will do it safely.
Mm-hmm. What's been the impact of this pause in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine here in Iowa? And you know most specifically about the University of Iowa Hospital's vaccine clinics, many of those clinics going on. What's been the impact?
Well, the impact is that we have fewer vaccine doses available for those who are eligible. But I am hopeful that CDC and FDA will review all the information that they may need in the next week or so, and that they may approve this vaccine again to be given to people. Again, we know the benefits of the vaccine. They're just investigating what should be the best messaging for providers and patients to look for the possibility of this rare event. And if it happens, how to treat it. Because it's a special kind of clot, it requires a special kind of treatment. So it slows down a little bit our efforts, but I am, again, still optimistic that we will be able to continue vaccinating with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, Dr. Salinas, a little bit about how this vaccine works, because I understand, at least my understanding is, it of course requires only one dose, unlike the Pfizer and Moderna, and it can, an advantage, it can be stored at low temperatures, but not the super low temperatures of the Pfizer and the Moderna. Is it a completely different approach to immunizing people, a different model than the Pfizer or Moderna?
Yes, absolutely. Both Pfizer and Moderna use a relatively brand new mechanism, which is messenger RNA. So a type of nucleic acid-based vaccine surrounded by a lipid coat. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine uses an adenovirus vector, which is similar, or the technology is similar to what is used by AstraZeneca and Gamaleya, the Russian vaccine. And in these vaccines, we use a piece of DNA that is entered into the envelope of a virus. The virus is not alive, doesn't cause infection, but it is used to introduce this piece of DNA into the human cells, so they produce the spike protein and therefore lead to immunity. So yes, the mechanism is different. It's an adenovirus vector that is used, and that mechanism may be associated with this rare adverse event. Therefore, those people who have received or will receive a Moderna or Pfizer vaccine should not be concerned about this. There is no evidence that the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines have an increased risk of clots. And even if you have received, or farther down the road, when the Johnson & Johnson vaccine gets the green light again, you need to know that even though these adverse events may happen with these new medications, they are exceedingly rare. And in the setting of a global pandemic, you're still way better off receiving the vaccine than not receiving a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Salinas, as an epidemiologist, the hospital epidemiologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, how much do you worry about this causing an erosion in public confidence? We need to reach that herd immunity. This has to be a real worry.
Well, we knew that there would be hiccups along the way, production problems, and always when you start administering any pharmaceutical intervention, in this case vaccines, to millions of people, you are bound to encounter very rare events that you could not see in clinical trials. This happens with every single medication that we have. The good news is that these events, although serious, appear to be quite infrequent. So again, in the setting of a global pandemic, I believe that the CDC will eventually lift the restrictions and proceed with vaccination. The bottom line is that Iowans need to continue being eager to get vaccinated. Do what you can. Know that America protects its citizens and has the CDC and the FDA and their scientists that will make the necessary assessments. And if they give this vaccine the green light again, it will be because it is deemed to be safe and effective to be received.
Mm-hmm. At this point in our vaccine campaign, Dr. Salinas, perhaps apart from this latest Johnson & Johnson hiccup, what do you see as the biggest challenges in the coming weeks and months as we hopefully close the chapter on this pandemic?
Well, I think that we cannot chant victory too soon, and vaccines are a powerful tool in our fight against the pandemic, but it's not the only tool. We need to continue implementing other non-pharmaceutical interventions, wearing masks in public, avoiding crowded indoor spaces, and we have to remain nimble. because our vaccination campaign at the very beginning is very easy because you have a large proportion of the population that is very eager to receive the vaccine. As you vaccinate all of those groups, you may need to transition to other groups that may need more information, that may have barriers to access to care, and you may have to do more outreach. So far, the approach has been relatively passive. You have to go, or you expect citizens to log in online and sign up and voluntarily go to a place. Eventually, we may need to transition. If those efforts dry out, if we don't have enough people volunteering for the vaccines, we may need to go seek them out in their neighborhoods, in their jobs, churches. So again, we will need to have a more flexible, a more reactive approach, and we'll need to go and search all the Iowa citizens, at least, so they have a vaccine offered to them.
Mm-hmm. And individuals who, as a society, we want to rid ourselves of this pandemic. So individuals can help by talking to friends, neighbors about this. Do you imagine a good approach just to help provide information where necessary, direct them to good sources, credible sources of information?
Absolutely. Yes, I see receiving a vaccine as a patriotic act. And this is what we do not only to protect ourselves, but to protect each other. It's as if each of us carries a shield, and my shield protects myself, but protects the soldier to my left and to my right. That's what vaccines are. So yes, if you can do whatever it takes to go talk to your neighborhoods, to your family and friends, give them information to reassure them that these vaccines are still safe, are effective, they are our best strategy to end the pandemic and to return to some normality, you will be doing something good for yourself and for society.
Dr. Jorge Salinas, the hospital epidemiologist at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics in Iowa City. Dr. Salinas, thank you so much for joining us once again with an update.
Oh, thank you, Ben.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This half hour, focusing on perspectives on the ongoing vaccination campaign. The CDC and FDA have called for an immediate pause on the use of the one-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine. We were just talking about that. Six women experiencing severe, very, very rare blood clots. Federal officials say they are recommending a pause until they further investigate these cases. Again, the clots appear to be extremely rare. Joining me now with their thoughts and some of the reporting that they've been doing, Michaela Ram, health reporter for the Gazette, and Natalie Krebs, IPR's health reporter. Natalie and Michaela, welcome to the program. Welcome back.
Hey, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
So, Michaela, let me start with you. Johnson & Johnson, obviously the health focus for this week. What aspects have you been covering with this Johnson & Johnson vaccine pause?
Yeah, absolutely. So as soon as that federal guidance came out, the state also issued similar guidance advising vaccine providers across the state, whether that's healthcare clinics, pharmacies, et cetera, advise them to pause distribution on this vaccine. Now, we see less of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine in the state than we do the Pfizer and Moderna, but it does seem to be having an impact locally. I've been reporting on some efforts locally to reach vulnerable populations. This vaccine was really ideal for reaching certain groups who face barriers to getting a vaccine, whether that's transportation or just lack of access to healthcare. And so the clinics that were planned this week, they've really had to pivot and figure out a new alternative to get those people vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. And Natalie, your focus has been?
Same thing, basically, just seeing what kind of clinics this affects. Michaela was right. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, as it's one dose, it's like a one and done type thing, basically is a vaccine that's used for more vulnerable populations, like people experiencing homelessness, refugee and immigrant populations, just basically people who they know are going to have maybe more difficulty going to a second follow-up appointment.
Mm-hmm. And Michaela, what are local health officials doing in lieu of of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Are they able, I mean, these other vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, not as transportable, not as easy to keep intact because they have to be at such low temperatures?
Yeah, absolutely. That's definitely true. And that's definitely the case for some of these rural county public health departments. You know, this vaccine was ideal for those type of things. But it sounds like local public health officials I've talked to are really working hard to reallocate and kind of pivot their distribution plans right now. So, for example, there's supposed to be a homeless vaccine clinic happening in Cedar Rapids this week. And so instead of using the Johnson & Johnson, they're going to switch to the Pfizer vaccine. Mm-hmm. So they're adjusting to the best they can, but local public health officials I talked to seem pretty confident that they can still get the job done.
Natalie, I know in your reporting, interesting finding, some may not think of this as intuitive, but a University of Iowa study finding that healthcare workers were more likely to develop COVID-19 infections, not from their workplace, but from exposures at home, right?
Yeah, University of Iowa hospitals and clinics basically just looked at their own data from when their employees or healthcare worker employees reported that they had a significant COVID-19 exposure. So that's like being, you know, exposed to someone who's COVID-19 without a mask for more than 15 minutes, being, you know, closer than 6 feet together. And basically they looked at data from, I think it was September through November of last year, especially during that huge spike, and basically just found that the most people whose exposures turned into infections, that was from the home. And they kind of speculated it wasn't that surprising, basically, because, you know, you let down your guard when you go home, you take off your mask and such. And so, you know, these exposures, I think, at home were theorized to be more prolonged.
Right. And Natalie, you can speak to this, not all Iowa hospitals, but you have a lot of contact with these hospitals. They are really taking really impeccable safety precautions should you need any treatment in a hospital, right?
Right. Yeah. And so it's counterintuitive, but not counterintuitive, the findings, because, yeah, if, you know, healthcare workers, especially those working on the front lines with COVID patients, have been covered in PPE this whole time and have been really careful. And the researcher I spoke with, you know, sort of just theorized that some of these exposures could just happen on lunch breaks with colleagues and stuff, just because the amount of time that they're, you know, outside of their PPE is very limited, if any at all, in healthcare settings.
Mm-hmm. Michaela Ram, back to you as a Gazette health reporter. Of course, this Johnson & Johnson story has raised concern about hesitancy. We don't need hesitancy, as our epidemiologist just explained. Right now, we sort of have a big bulge of people very, very willing to get vaccinated. And we love that fact. And our local health authorities in clinics and all over, pharmacies in Iowa, are doing a wonderful job, from what I've heard, in getting shots into arms. But we have to think about the time when we need to reach that herd immunity, and when the last part of the population required for that herd immunity has to be sort of convinced, get off the fence, right? And we're worried that this Johnson & Johnson episode, hiccup, as the epidemiologist said, is going to impact that.
Yeah, absolutely. To your point, Ben, you know, hesitancy really existed before even this Johnson & Johnson hiccup, you know, for a variety of reasons, you know, and for different perspectives, too. You know, we know Black and brown individuals tend to be more hesitant for different reasons than people who are white, for example, systematic racism or just negative experiences they've had with the healthcare system may prompt some people to be hesitant to take the vaccine. And I do think that is the worry among public health officials, that just, this news just gives more reason for people not to take the vaccine. You know, just anecdotally through my reporting, I'm talking with people who, everyday people who are really interested in helping people get the vaccine. They say it's slowing down. Appointments are staying open longer than they used to. And I know the governor mentioned at her press conference that there are now 21 counties that have declined new vaccine allotments for this past week because they didn't need them to fulfill the demand in their county. So I think we are starting to see kind of that scramble for appointments starting to slow down. And it does make me wonder if that's because more people are mm-hmm. still on that fence.
Right. And what are we at? Michaela, do you have that figure? What are we at? Approaching 40% of Iowans with their first dose? Anyway,
Natalie may know that number before I do, but
sorry to put you on the spot. Yeah, I mean, these figures change on a daily basis, so sorry to put you on the spot there. Let's end with this, perhaps some cautionary words. As more and more of us become fully vaccinated, Natalie, remind us what that means for the fully vaccinated. How may this change enjoying socializing more while at the same time not letting a guard down?
Yeah, I mean, the CDC's issued guidance about what you can do when you're fully vaccinated, which includes, you know, gathering unmasked, you know, in your house with other fully vaccinated people. Fully vaccinated meaning you're waiting 2 weeks after your final dose of the vaccine. And so, you know, things are starting to open up. You're definitely allowed to do more. But at the same time, again, we're seeing a rise in cases. And so people really need to continue to practice those, you know, public health mitigation strategies. So continue to wear masks, continue to social distance, especially when you don't know if that other person's been vaccinated, especially when you're in public, because, you know, we're still seeing hospitalizations are over 200 and this pandemic is not over.
Right. A few seconds. Anything to add to that, Michaela, before we say goodbye?
No, I think Natalie covered it well. I think that's still important to remember that we haven't reached herd immunity yet. So practicing those strategies is still really important to keeping people out of the hospital and keep them from getting sick.
Well, thank you very much for teaming up our health reporters, Michaela Ram of the Gazette and Natalie Krebs of Iowa Public Radio. Natalie and Michaela, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
Well, this week you heard in the news two Iowa rivers were named among the nation's top 10 most endangered by an advocacy group. We'll talk about it tomorrow on our News Buzz edition. Also, Cassidy Arena tells us about Iowa's first Latino film festival. That'll be something to look forward to for tomorrow. Catch your News Buzz tomorrow at this time. River to River, produced by Matt Alvarez and Rick Brewer. Catherine Perkins, our executive producer. River to River, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.